Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Well, it's time again for us to compile another UPR community book list. We do this about quarterly. We know that odds are you're an avid reader. Most of us in our UPR community are. And so we like to help each other out. Maybe there's a book that I'm reading that you'd like to read, or vice versa. We want to know what you're reading, what's on your nightstand or device right now. Is there a book that's had a big impact on you? Which books are you looking forward to reading? And perhaps you'd like to tell us about a personal story connected to a favorite book. These could be new books, or it could be classics that you're rediscovering. We'd love to hear about fiction, nonfiction, young adult, children's books, anything you're reading. One suggestion or many are welcome. Send that to us at upraccess@gmail.com. Just a quick email, upraccess@gmail.com, one book or several. We'll compile that into a UPR community book list, put that on our website, and we'll also get reading suggestions from this week. This time it's one bookseller, David Everett from Back and Beyond Books. We'll talk to him in about 10 minutes. And we have with us a UPR friend, avid reader Elaine Thatcher, is joining us again. Thanks for coming back in.
Always fun to be here.
How's your reading going these days?
You know, this time I have a list of great books. Sometimes I come in here and I go, oh, I didn't like anything I read. I have a list of books that I loved this time around, so we'll see.
All right. That's wonderful. And, you know, the books you didn't love, that helps too. You just steer clear of that one, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Or sometimes I like to continue reading a book that I just know is not that good because it's kind of like watching a train wreck, you know.
Yes.
How's this going to end? It's kind of a fascination, you know. I don't encounter that many books like that, right? Usually if it's not so good, I'll just quit. But
yeah, I read one that's kind of like that, and the author will surprise you. It's Isaac Asimov.
Ah.
But I think I'm just past my science fiction phase.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Preferences, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to have David Everett here in about 10 minutes, like I said. So let's jump into your list. What have you been reading?
I'll tell you probably one of my favorites that I've ever read. And, you know, sometimes these books have been mentioned on a previous book show because I read them because of the recommendations of the booksellers, and I think this might be one that I got from one of the booksellers. There Are Rivers in the Sky by Elif Shafak.
Ah.
It's a novel, and its core character is water.
Really?
And it has three main characters, one of whom lives along the Thames in the 1850s, one who lives along the Thames in the 2018 area, and one who lives along the Tigris in 2014. And, you know, this is one of those books. I love it when I get a book that forces me off to the internet to do research on whatever topic it introduces to me because I'm curious about this. And in this case, it was a couple of different things. One is the Yazidi people.
Yes.
You've heard of them.
I've heard of them, yes.
They are not Islamic, not Christian, but they are native to the Mesopotamian area. And so one of those characters is one of those. And they have been subject over the years to numerous genocides. And so that plays into this. But then we have another character, the one in the 1850s, who is modeled on a real guy who, kind of a savant, a guy who grew up in the slums of London and had a gift for seeing patterns and figured out how to read cuneiform.
Really?
Yeah. So this is a fictional character based on this. I think the real guy's name was George Smith or something like that. But this guy is based on that. And it's just a fascinating book. It kind of starts with a drop of water and ends with a drop of water.
Yeah, wow.
And the stories are compelling and just a wonderful read. It's one of the best books I've read.
Yeah. So tell me again the...
It is called There Are Rivers in the Sky by Elif, E-L-I-F, Shafak, S-H-A-F-A-K.
Okay. Oh, wonderful. Well, we have David on the line right now, so let's go to him right now. David Everett, Back Beyond Books. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. We got Elaine Thatcher with us as well here. So I'm guessing you got some books to recommend to us.
I certainly do, although maybe recommend is... I don't know if recommend is the right word, or more if the word is inflict upon
inflict.
Your audience.
Okay.
Yeah. Really just kind of given up on the notion of escapist titles or books that, you know, kind of take you away from reality. And I'm just doubling down on the reality piece instead, sort of.
Yeah, I can sympathize with that. Yeah.
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 You know, the first one that I'm reading is actually a fiction book, but it does have a sort of deep connection to our reality today. I don't know if anybody's talked about What We Can Know by Ian McEwan yet.
No, we just barely got started, so we haven't talked about any of these books.
Excellent. This guy was the author of Atonement, British, just a prolific writer, and his latest novel is called What We Can Know, and it's set maybe 100 years in the future, after what he alludes to as the derangement and the inundation, two separate events that happen with, you know, probably in the 2040s, 2050s, 2060s. And he basically this is a look back at what happens in this period of time, what he calls the 90-30 period, from 1990 to 2030. And how it kind of a nostalgic almost look back, or maybe a reverential look back for the time when things in on our planet could be changed, when humans basically had control of their fate prior to these events happening. That then you don't really know, but you learn. It seems like maybe wiped out a significant portion of the population and just rendered the planet a very different planet than it was. So really, you know, talking about, in essence, the impacts of climate change that are seeming to feel more and more inevitable coming our way. And I will say I was inspired to read this because I got down the road on this, what they call maybe cli-fi or climate fiction,
yes,
which is really speculative mm-hmm. fiction around what might happen if climate change isn't addressed effectively, because I read this book called The Deluge by Stephen Markley. It's been out for a couple of years. Is that one on anybody's radar?
I haven't heard of it, no.
Nope. Well, I think...
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I think we heard somebody talk about it, but that's it, yeah.
It might have been me, because I can't stop talking about it. I'm totally obsessed
okay.
with it. It's like, it's this crazy book. It's 850 pages long, but it is basically a exposition of what will happen over the next 20 to 30 years if we don't figure out the climate change thing. So it's kind of invaded my psyche, I guess you could say. It's the first book I ever dreamed about, and it's really left a bit of a mark, as you can probably tell.
Huh.
Yeah. So Deluge. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got What We Can Know by Ian McEwan, which just came out, and then The Deluge by Stephen Markley,
okay,
which is a couple of years old.
Yeah.
Then maybe bringing it a little more into the specifics of our politics and what's happening in our kind of country and our world today. I'm reading a couple of books that I thought were super relevant. One is called Why Empires Fail. And that one, I might have mentioned that one as well, but it leads into the next one I'm talking about. And that's by Peter Heather and John Rapley, and basically looks at the disconcerting parallels between the fall of Rome and what's happening in our American empire today. Because, as you know, you all know, we all know, all empires fail at some point. And so it's inevitable that the one we tend to live in will as well. And so it's an interesting thing to look at how those failures eventually take place. So without going too much further into that one, I would lead directly to the next one.
Let me just insert here. I was just listening this morning on NPR. There was an interview with Ray Dalio. Anyway,
yeah, Dalio.
They referred to a book called, you said this book that you're talking about is called Why Empires Fail. This book,
correct,
it's a little bit older, but not terribly old, is called Why Nations Fail. And it discusses economics and so forth. So if you're interested in why countries fail, there are a couple of books.
Okay.
Definitely. I got halfway through Ray Dalio's book called Principles for Dealing with the Changing World Order. And
yes.
It's as dense as you can imagine. He does do the reader a favor of putting a lot of the highlights in bold throughout the book, which I thought was both arrogant, hilarious, and effective. But I think that predated, I'm trying to look, I'm looking at it right now, it's on my shelf. That one came out in 2021, and I think was the precursor to the one you're talking about. So he's definitely on top of that sense of, you know, from throughout history, how nation states and empires ebb and flow, for sure. Cool. So you want me to move on?
Yes, indeed.
Well, moving on maybe is not the right word either, but moving further deep into the abyss, maybe. This book is called Anger, Fear, and Domination. And it's by a gentleman named William Galston. It's a Yale University book, and it's a press book, and it's actually nice and small, relatively, compared to these other texts. And what he does is really dive deep into this notion that if we're going to figure out how to make this world a better place, we have to not just understand things like patriotism and, you know, the collective good and these impulses that we like to think are so productive and positive for our, as our culture wants to promote, but we got to really understand the dark forces at play, right? Dark passions, he says, they're ascendant. We have to fully acknowledge, you know, and seek to understand how they are effective in our culture. And when we're talking about those dark passions, you know, we're talking about all the dark stuff, whether that's resentment or hatred or the drive to dominate. Humiliation in particular is one that he really focuses on. And it's interesting. It's not that it's kind of third rail type stuff, but it's more like stuff that people just don't want to necessarily think about. And I get it, you know, it's you don't want to think about hate, but at the same time, these are ascendant forces in how we are governing ourselves. And so seeking to understand those more directly is super important. And anyway, I've really enjoyed, maybe enjoyed isn't the right word again, but I have certainly absorbed that book. And
what was that title again?
It doesn't beat around the bush. It's Anger, Fear, Domination. That's the name of it. Dark Passions and the Power of Political Speech is the subtitle. So, and then I would like to end on a semi-positive note, if I may. There is a book that's been out for a couple of years that recently was updated after the 2024 election, and it's called A Post-Truth World. It's by Ken Wilber, and this is a publication of Shambhala Press, so tends to be a little more philosophical, a little more sort of heady, but this one I really enjoyed the read. It was a recommendation from another bookseller, actually, in San Francisco, that came my way, and it really, again, takes a longer arc of examination by this philosopher, Ken Wilber, and basically, you know, tries to put into context what he's saying is this support for antagonism and authoritarianism now, and put that in the context of, indeed, the arc toward improvement and a better existence is long. It does have fits and starts, and we might be in the middle of a fit of a sort. You know, there's a backlash and then rebound, and it was helpful to put in context where we're at in terms of the backlash / rebound cycle, I guess you could say, or pattern moving forward. So it really does put the polarization in context and explains in, I think, a really helpful way how there are these different, it's almost like maturity levels, and we as a person go through them as a human, you know, like basically when you're born, how you are, and then going through adolescence, and how as a culture we have almost the exact same phases of existence. And so I thought that actually did provide a little bit of a positive outlook on the fact that we tend to eventually get better at things.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, that's hopeful, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are like, I'm never having this guy on again.
Well, a lot of us are thinking about these things, right? So good to have some books to read.
No doubt about it. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay, well, David Everett, back of Beyond Books in Moab. By the way, how's business down there? How are things in Moab?
Things are great. We have had a little rain this morning, which, as you can imagine, is great for bookstore business. And we are having our big literary event of the season down here tonight, if anybody's in town. It's part of the Utah Humanities Book Festival. Chris Latray, who was the poet laureate, actually, for the state of Montana, and has written a really fantastic book called Becoming Little Shell, will be speaking with us at Star Hall at 7 o'clock tonight for free here in Moab.
Oh, great. What was that? What was the title of his book again?
Becoming Little Shell.
Shell.
Shell, yep. Mm-hmm.
Like a seashell.
Like a seashell, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Who's the author again?
Chris. His name is Chris Latray.
Okay.
L-A space T-R-A-Y. Yeah, Becoming Little Shell, a landless Indian's Journey Home.
Wonderful.
All right, yeah, we'll read that one as well and encourage people to come to the event.
Love it. Thank you.
All right, David, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Take care.
Okay, thanks.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. All right, well, let's take a break, and when we come back, more from Elaine's List. I have a few to share as well, and really hope to hear from you as well. You can email us to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. A book that you're really into, or a series of books. This could be young adult or children's books, anything you're reading. Maybe a classic that you've gone back to. UPRAccess@gmail.com, UPRAccess@gmail.com. More following this. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We are compiling another UPR community book list. A lot of us are big readers, and it's nice to share what you're reading. What you're reading might pique some interest in me. I may want to read that as well, and vice versa. So we do this about quarterly. We put this together, post this on our website, and it's a nice book list that we compile in the end. We talked there with early in the program with David Everett from Back of Beyond Books in Moab. And have Elaine Thatcher with me for the hour. Usually we have some other booksellers, so we have some illness and other conflicts, so we won't have any of the other booksellers today. So spotlight, especially on you, want to know what you're reading, get that to us at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Well, Elaine, what's next on your list?
So it's an embarrassment, embarrassment of riches, so many good books. One that I read by Toni Morrison called Recitatif, or Recitatif, depending on how you pronounce that, I guess. It's the only short story she ever wrote, and so it exists as a standalone book, but it's a little tiny book. And the story follows two women and never tells you which one is black and which one is white.
Oh, interesting.
And it makes you question your assumptions. It's a lovely book and well worth reading and thinking about your own reactions to people and what they say and do.
Yeah. Toni Morrison, Recitatif.
Yes.
Yeah.
Last time we met, I was reading David Copperfield by Charles Dickens.
Mm-hmm.
I had almost finished it at that point, and the reason I was reading it was because the next book I wanted to read was Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. And Demon Copperhead is based on the structure and story of David Copperfield. So I finished David Copperfield, and I read Demon Copperhead. I'll tell you from the outset, I really like Barbara Kingsolver's writing very much. But this is a hard book to read because it deals with the character lives in Kentucky during, I think, the 90s, if I remember, and the terrible opioid pandemic or epidemic that covered that area, particularly because of people who had injuries from mining and the farming and the hard lives they led. There were there were companies giving out opioids, particularly OxyContin. But it follows the story of this young man. His real name is Damon, but his friends call him Demon. And he's got red hair, so he's called Copperhead, Demon Copperhead. And it follows him from... If you've read David Copperfield, you will be able to follow the characters and situations throughout the book that she adapts to this new setting. And I think the genius of it is that she took that and was able to adapt it to a different life, a different time. The difficulty is in facing... It's much more real. The difficulties faced by Demon Copperhead are much more real to me as a 21st century American than the ordeals of David Copperfield in the 19th century. But it's very well written. It's a beautiful book, and it's another one I highly recommend.
So would you suggest people read David Copperfield first?
I would. Yeah. I did, and I'm glad I did, because I could see the parallels. But you don't have to.
Yeah.
You know?
A Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. Yeah. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
What's next?
Want me to keep going?
We'll do one more and then I'll do a couple. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one that I'm reading right now, and I think I got it from this show, is called Ingrained, an uplifting memoir about woodworking and craftsmanship by Callum Robinson. This man, he's a Scottish woodworker. Beautiful prose, absolutely gorgeous, but very accessible. Really sort of plain spoken in a way, but also just lots of imagery and beautiful, just beautifully written. And he tells the story of it's about him learning woodworking from his father and then trying to start a business of his own. And, oh gosh, I just love it. It's easy to read. It flows very nicely. So you can get it in an audiobook, I hear, with him reading it, so you would get the benefit of his Scottish accent. Mm-hmm. But I would say I'm getting an enormous amount of pleasure from just reading the written word.
Yeah. Ingrained by Callum Robinson.
Yep.
Yeah. That does sound wonderful. Well, let me share a couple here. I recently discovered Rick Atkinson, a historian. You may be well familiar with him, read all his books. I'm new to the party. So he wrote a series, a trilogy called the Liberation Trilogy. It's World War II. So the first book in the series deals with North Africa. Second book is invasion of Sicily and Italy. And the third book, which I'm reading right now, is The Guns at Last Light. The Guns at Last Light by Rick Atkinson. And this is D-Day and then the end of the war, invasion of Europe. And I've read, you know, several books on World War II and specifically on D-Day and the war in Europe. But what Rick Atkinson really brings is incredible research. I don't know. You know, historians do research. Rick Atkinson seems to get the gold medal for he goes into places. So the details here are just things I'd never heard of, even reading other histories. Hmm. Now, sometimes I get a little too much, right? Mm-hmm. I'll say, okay, Rick, you could save that one, you know. But it's just fascinating. It really takes you there. So The Guns at Last Light. And then I'm looking forward to reading, he has a trilogy on the Revolutionary War. And so the first one in that series is called The British Are Coming. And I expect the same level of detail there, and I expect to be fascinated there. So Rick Atkinson, The Guns at Last Light and The British Are Coming.
I should add, my father was in Europe for the war, and he got to Normandy just, I don't know, about a month after D-Day. But I remember one time I was cooking a meal and I put cilantro in it, and he told me he didn't like cilantro because it reminded him of Normandy.
Really?
Yep. So I assume that coriander grows around there.
It must do, yeah.
But yeah, so just a detail.
A little detail, yeah. Yeah, which really brings some spice to the, you know, I guess pun in this case intended. Next one I want to share is, and it seems like I always share a Barbara Tuchman book, because I'm always going back to Barbara Tuchman. I just admire her so much. She never got a degree. Well, a bachelor's, but she was not a professional historian. Some professional historians look down their nose at her, but a lot of those professional historians can't hold a candle to her as in terms of writing, right?
Yeah.
And just taking a thesis and applying just the right amount of argument to that, you know, in detail. So the one I've been going back to is called The March of Folly. In The March of Folly, Barbara Tuchman, her thesis here is the pursuit by a government of policies contrary to their own interests. So she talks about how Britain lost the Americas. They you know, could have kept the Americas if they'd pursued policies more in line with their self-interest, but stubbornness, etc. She also has a chapter on how America lost the war in Vietnam. I think the most fascinating for me, and that I definitely go back to this book because of this chapter, Renaissance popes and how they provoked the Reformation. There were a lot of naughty popes in that,
yes, there were.
Era. There was a reason people like Martin Luther were disillusioned, right?
That's right.
If you just had good popes who had the church, had the people's interests in mind, maybe you would not have had the Reformation. Who knows? But as she starts with the Trojan horse, you know, the Greeks and everything. So March of Folly, The March of Folly by Barbara Tuchman.
That sounds interesting. That sounds like one I'd like to read.
So what's next on your list?
Okay, so I am interested in creativity, and I read a lot about it. I don't always bring my books on that here just because they seem kind of narrow in their focus, but two little books that I have read this time that I really enjoyed. They're both called Daily Rituals by Mason Curry. The first one is called Daily Rituals, How Artists Work. And the second one is Daily Rituals, Women at Work. So I really loved the one on women, probably because I am one. But his interest was to find out how, well, like the title says, how artists work. So the first book is filled with well-known artists, dancers, philosophers, painters, you know, you name it, writers, creative people. And they're mostly, almost all men. There are very, very few women in the book. But it just sort of outlines what their daily schedule was for the most part. You know, and interestingly enough, the men started out in the morning with rising whenever they rose, early or late, but breakfast. And then they work for about 3 hours, and then they get a nice lunch, and then they take a long walk. And then you get to the women.
Yeah.
And the women, who also have other concerns like the household and getting their own meals or getting meals for their spouse or their loved ones, whatever, and, you know, keeping up the household, it's very interesting. The thing that, I mean, I found lots of inspiration in these two books, particularly the women one, but things that I underlined for myself to think back on and refer to again. And the biggest thing is deep dedication to your art form, whatever it is, and commitment to spending time with it, regardless of the challenges. They are short vignettes. You can read one. They're most of them are about a page and a half. It's a small book, so the pages aren't very big either. So about a page and a half for a vignette, or you can read a whole bunch of them. Just pick and choose as you go. I loved these two little books.
Oh, so tell me the titles again.
They're both called Daily Rituals. The first one is, the subtitle is How Artists Work. The author is Mason Curry. And the second book, the subtitle is Women at Work.
Okay, wonderful. That does sound fascinating.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those.
Yeah, you could learn a lot from that.
So,
what's next on your list?
So, I mentioned earlier that I read something by Isaac Asimov, and I don't think I've read anything of his before. And I've sort of, you know, I used to quite like science fiction and fantasy, and I'm totally not into that anymore.
Uh-huh.
But I thought I was watching a television show called Foundation, based on this book, Foundation, by Isaac Asimov. And I thought, I need to go read the book and see what this is all about. Well, it bore absolutely no resemblance. The TV show and the book were completely different from one another, except for a few names used. That was it. But I read it, and it's about an empire, a galactic empire in the future, and a genius who has figured out how to predict the future by using something he calls psychohistory. And then a foundation is created for him to continue his work and for his followers to continue his work. And the book, there are further books in the series. There's at least a trilogy, and I think there might be a couple more beyond that. Foundation books, but the first book is called Foundation, and the foundation was formed, and it was sent on to a faraway planet, kind of exiled by the empire, and just follows the characters, and it skips time quite a lot in terms of, you know, you don't follow one character all the way through, but you follow the foundation all the way through, and to the point where it becomes a religion. And later on, you know, so it's an interesting concept. It just didn't ring my chimes. But I would say if you like that kind of fiction, you might really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And don't watch the TV show.
Okay. Okay. All right. Foundation.
By Isaac Asimov.
Isaac Asimov. All right. Yeah. Wonderful. Let me see. Let me do one more. Before we go to break here, I want to recommend one more Barbara Tuchman book. This one I've just barely started, but I think it's going to be interesting. It's her talking about writing history. So it's selected essays. It's called Practicing History.
I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Yeah, she's in the preface. She gives kind of a history of herself, and how she got into writing history. She took some time off to raise some kids, right, and got back into it and that whole thing. And but her approach to history, how she chooses the subjects, or how she chose the subjects that she did, and how she approached it. So I'm looking forward to reading the rest of this. It's called Practicing History by Barbara Tuchman.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's take another break. We'll come back with a final segment with Elaine Thatcher. Love to hear from you. Would love to get your a book suggestion or maybe a list. You can email that to upraccess@gmail.com. upraccess@gmail.com. More following this. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. We're doing our quarterly UPR community book list. We're compiling a book list, Help Each Other. So we'd love to know what you're reading. Maybe what you're reading is something I'd like to read, and vice versa. We talked with David Everett from Back of Beyond Books. We have his list. We'll put that up on our website a little bit later today. And Elaine Thatcher is with us as well. She's going through her book list. We'll have that up as well. I've got some suggestions. Love to hear from you. We just have a few minutes left here, so I'd love to get your suggestion on. And you can get that to us by email, upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. That's upraccess@gmail.com. Let's see. So, Elaine, what's next on your list?
Well, the only other thing that I have on my list at the moment is P.G. Wodehouse again.
Oh, great.
Because I don't read the books all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I dip into them.
Yes.
And especially when I need some lighthearted relief.
you know,
David was talking about the serious books he's reading, and I thought, oh,
yeah, it's true.
We can be surrounded by sadness and darkness, but P.G. Wodehouse is a great elixir for that. So I just have to put in another plug for that because you're the one that got me onto him. But it's just wonderful stuff to just read a short story in or a chapter and just laugh.
Wonderful. So you're saying anything by P.G. Woodhouse.
Yes.
Yeah, wonderful. I second that. I discovered P.G. Woodhouse as a teenager, I think. I'll tell an anecdote. I was in the honors program up here at USU. I've been in the honors program, then I've had straight F's. So I had a very varied undergrad career, in the middle of which the Office of Student Progress sent me a letter saying, anything we can do to help you, to kind of move you along, because it took me 15 years to finally, not going to school all the time, but off and on, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, at this point, I was in the honors program. Doug Alder was who you might remember.
I remember him.
Was the head of the program. Later became president of what's now Utah Tech.
Yep.
And so I told him what I'd been reading that summer. I said, a bunch of P.G. Woodhouse. He said, yeah, you might want to add in some more serious stuff. You know, you might want to more substantive stuff, right? And I don't know. I don't think I pushed back verbally, but I thought, hey, P.G. Woodhouse is classic. You know,
<That's>
sometimes you got to let your hair down, have fun.
Well, the book I have is a thick book, and it's the collected works.
Oh, that's great.
So
yeah.
I have it all, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I just dip in and out.
Yeah. I would really recommend for people, of course, Jeeves and Wooster. And I could recommend the BBC series as well.
Yes, yes.
With Fry and Laurie.
Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry, yes.
But the Moliner stories are... Mm-hmm. Never let you down. Just ridiculous, right? And fun. It's Mr. Moliner sits in the Angler's Rest pub and sips his something in bitters. He always they refer to people in the pub by what they drink.
Uh-huh.
And somebody will say something, and then he'll commandeer the conversation to tell a ridiculous story of one of his relatives.
I know somebody like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, Mr. Moliner, love his stories. Anyway, I totally second that P.G. Woodhouse, anything by P.G. Woodhouse. Let's see. I think I've suggested this before, but I just thought of it in the previous discussion here this hour. Edward Rutherford, wonderful author. He writes these huge histories. He'll start in prehistoric times and come to the present time. He wrote a history of New York City and Paris. This one is called Sarum, S-A-R-U-M.
Oh, I've read that.
And it's a book of Salisbury. Mm-hmm. It's a history of Salisbury. Really, he calls it the subtitle novel of England. He's trying to... So you start, and I confess I have not read it all the way through. So you've got it over on me.
I have read it. It's been a long time since I read it, but it's fascinating because it starts in prehistory.
Yes.
And the thing about Salisbury, it's right there by Stonehenge.
Yes.
And so it brings in that side of things, and then you follow it all the way up through building the cathedral.
Yeah.
You know, the Middle Ages on through. I don't remember how far it goes into the modern times, but it's one of those. It's like reading. What was his name? The guy that wrote Hawaii.
Yeah, Michener.
Yes, Michener. It's like reading one of his novels.
Yes.
The same sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. The opening passage just stays with me. This has been several years since I read that, and then kind of put it aside. But the hero of the story in the prehistoric times. Takes a journey from kind of the north of England. He's going to go to the European mainland. Of course, it's not separated then. There's an ice bridge. So he fully expects to be able to cross over. He's going to go to warmer climes, find more food for his family, right? And this incredible scene where he stops at what is now, very recently, become the English Channel.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the day before, right? And he can't cross now, right?
Uh-huh.
And then the history takes off from there. But
yeah,
yeah, it's very, very well written. Let's see. I want to recommend a Louis L'Amour. Speaking of lighter.
Oh, yes, I know you like
lighter
Louis L'Amour.
I
can't say that he's my favorite.
I dip back into Louis L'Amour every once in a while. And it's all the same thing. You know, it's kind of...
the hero.
The hero gets shot to doll rags, and the heroine, nurses him back to health. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I love it. And I love the descriptions. L'Amour said he never described anything in these books that he hadn't personally walked. And I believe it from the descriptions, you know. And he loved, one of his favorite places in the world is southeastern Utah, mm-hmm. the San Juan area. So several books are set there. But the one I want to recommend today is one of Louis L'Amour's few comedies, comedies in quotes. It's not laugh out loud funny. It's kind of follows this kind of the same tropes, but it does have some comedic elements. It's called Fallon. That's the name of the hero. Macon Fallon is a man who thinks he's worse than he is. He's better than he really portrays, right? He has a heart. So he tries to perform a swindle, and in the end, he can't really pull it off. And then, but the ending of the book is a kind of a fun comedic ending, which you don't usually get.
Yeah,
from
right.
from Louis L'Amour. So Fallon, I would recommend. So Elaine, you wanted to maybe follow up on Deluge, I think, which was recommended by David Everett.
David mentioned Deluge as a book that changed his life. And during the break, we were talking about books that changed our lives. And I thought, you know, we have a little extra time today because we don't have all the booksellers due to circumstances we couldn't control. And so I was thinking about books that have changed my life. And two immediately come to mind that I recommend constantly to people. One is Community and the Politics of Place by Daniel Kemmis, K-E-M-M-I-S. Community and the Politics of Place. He was, for a time, the mayor of Missoula, Montana. He was a fellow at the Northern Lights Institute there. And he wrote several books about community and local government and local, you know, but his approach, I mean, it's probably very, I probably should read it again because it's probably very appropriate to where we are now in terms of being able to talk to people who don't agree with you and what it takes to make community in real life, you know, with the real problems we face. I remember talking, there's a whole section in the book where he talks about trying to negotiate with a laundromat owner over something. I don't remember what they disagreed about. So Community and the Politics of Place is one. Another one that I constantly recommend to people is,
it's so memorable, yeah.
Risk and Culture by, it's two authors, Risk and Culture, and it's an essay on, basically it talks about what culturally we are willing, what risks we are willing to take. And it talks about it in how our political choices help us determine, or vice versa, what risks we are most worried about. Are we most worried about national security or... being able to balance the budget? Those are more conservative views. Are we more worried about social safety net or the environment? Then those are more liberal views. And the things we choose to be worried about, and it's a choice. You know, so that book really, honestly, is one of the most amazing. Wildavsky is one of the authors. Douglas and Wildavsky are the two authors. Risk and Culture.
Risk and Culture.
It's probably from the 80s, I would think.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I was trying, when you mentioned that, I was trying to think. I'll have to do some more thinking on that. I'll bring that to our next program, I guess.
Yes. It's
For me, what books have changed my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing those. Yeah. And that brings us down to the end of our time. So
well, there we are.
We'll have to go do some more reading, Elaine. And we've got some ideas.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Elaine Thatcher has been with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. You can still get your book suggestions to us at upraccess@gmail.com. And thanks, everyone. We'll have that book list up on our website. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.
It's One Sky, Many Cultures. Skywatcher Leo T. here. As we head into the last third of October, already toward the celebration of spooky things of Halloween and, in many cultures, a celebration of our relatives who have gone before us, we have lots of company in the skies around us, with Comet Swan still visible in the south right after dark, Comet Lemon discovered in January near Tucson, possibly named after Mount Lemon nearby. This comet popped up just about last week as being a visible comet for those who can find the right spot at the right time, and it's in a good place. It has been hanging out between the Dipper Handle, or the Ursa Major, the Big Bear, or the Big Dipper, and Arcturus below. Follow the arc of the handle like you would arc to Arcturus, and the comet lives out here near Arcturus, just above the northwestern horizon, and it's brightening night by night. Comet Lemon should be at its peak brightness between October 28th and November 1st, but we'll see. I was able to spot this with a couple of other star watchers at Panorama Point in Capitol Reef National Park on Saturday. It took a while, and it's not visible till at least 8:30 after dark. Your cue is when it's dark enough to see the Big Dipper come out. Then start looking using your binoculars and scan around to the big orange Arcturus. What you find is a hazy, fuzzy tail and a little bit of the head or comma of the comet. It's pretty magical and worth sharing with folks around you, and then just get lost in space. Look up and look in the dark sky park, and you'll see so many gems that you'll be glad you came out with a reason to look at a comet, and then you don't even need that anymore. Up above in the east, I wheeled my telescope around to the east and saw the little planet Saturn with its rings edge on at a jaunty almost 45 degree angle, and then there's the Milky Way and all the star clusters and nebula toward the south in Sagittarius. Soak it up. Even if you're in the big town, it's also worth getting in a spot to see if you can spot the comet. That is a very good view of the western horizon you need. Also, Comet Swan is available, though a little bit harder to find, for me at least. Look to the southwest. Swan's been swimming around for a while out there. This week it moves fast across Scutum and southern Aquila the Eagle, nicely high in the southwest to the south after nightfall above Sagittarius on the horizon. And a bonus is that the Orionid meteor shower is taking place as well. Also, of course, since we're talking comets, Comet 31 Atlas, or 3I Atlas, is still zooming through the solar system at its incredibly different angle, almost perfectly along the planetary plane, and high speed from interstellar space, and is roughly between Mars and Jupiter. NASA is going to adjust its JUICE space probe out by Jupiter to try and get a better look at this character of a comet. Let's take the little Skywatcher ship out around the globe and then come back to Utah and visit a bit about the Ute culture. From the children's book, A True Book, the Ute people have lived in their land in the Rocky Mountains of present-day Colorado, Utah, and possibly. They came from southwestern Nevada and lived in Wyoming. Of course, people migrate and travel all of the time. The Ute people had ceremonies that marked the change of seasons, and like many people, held a dance on the summer solstice. And in the autumn, a ceremony took place before they began to harvest the vital pine nuts. They also held the famous bear dance. It was devoted to the grizzly, one of the largest and possibly dangerous animals of the Rockies. The Ute believed grizzlies had unusual powers and were magical, and that a grizzly taught the bear dance to a Ute hunter. The grizzly promised that as long as the Ute danced the bear dance, their hunters would find lots to hunt, and the women would have lots of children. If any Ute natives hear this program, I would love to hear from you about more sky lore of the Utes. Look on the Facebook page to communicate. In the meantime, when you're looking at the big bear in the sky chasing comets, feel the Utes. Check out Skywatcher Leo T. Facebook page for podcast, photos, and info. Also on powerhouse radio stations UPR, Utah State University out of Logan, KRCL in Salt Lake City, KZMU and the Wayne County and Garfield County Insider Newspaper from Escalante, Utah. So look up, look around, and get way lost in space. Skywatcher Leo T.